Welcome to a finals pre-game preview late afternoon preview of the NBA finals with my great friend Paul Mokeski. This is Ricky Hampton. We got Nets plus Nick Mota. We just wanted to hit this right quick, man, before things tip off Thursday. But Mo, before we get to the finals, I gotta ask you about the Celtics and Heat Game 7. Because when we talked Monday, everybody was when were we on last? It wasn't Monday, but we were on.
It was Monday before the show, before the game.
You said just don't give this thing to Boston because they're home.
Nope, it's not. You know, let's talk about that. But you know what? I've been thinking, don't give this thing to the Denver Nuggets either. Don't go there. Anyway.
You know what? That's why we're here. But I got to hit this right quick. Because Boston won 3 straight games, beat them twice in Miami, going back home with all the momentum at the Garden, man.
Yeah, here's what I like. In basketball, especially in the playoffs, I've been in a lot of them as a player and a coach. 7-game series. The hardest thing to do is win 3 games in a row, and the next hardest is to close out a team. So the Celtics won 3 in a row. So winning 4 in a row in a series is, you know, those are sweeps, and that's very, very difficult. And you know, we're seeing right here that Tatum went down in the first 30 seconds on the first play and sprained his ankle pretty darn bad. So he was limited and frustrated. You could see it. But the problem is all the other Celtics laid an egg. They peed in their pants. Marcus Smart, horrible. 9 points, 4 of those were at the end when it didn't matter. Tatum, Brown, you can see right there, he can't dribble. 8 turnovers.
8 turnovers.
He dribbled into people and turned the ball over. No one else showed up. Horford was bad. They looked like they were scared and nervous at the beginning of the game, and they were lucky that Miami was playing like garbage. And then Miami just kept plugging away, and Boston got worse. And, players didn't step up. And it's going to, you know, Jaylen Brown's question mark. Whether this team works together is a question mark. Whether the coach is there is a question mark. So, and, you know, I don't like blaming coaches, but let's face it. The Boston Celtics offense has no imagination. It's built on one-on-one going downhill from the wings, Tatum or Brown. And there's no movement, and it's stagnant, and it's not effective. And the other thing that's mind-blowing for me with the Celtics and a lot of NBA teams, when the Miami Heat threw a weak zone at them, they didn't know how to figure it out. Like I told you on Monday, I could drop a zone offense right now that would kill any offense in the NBA, but they don't do it. They just rely on, okay, we're going to keep the floor spread and attack them. But why don't you run some motion? Why don't you have some staggered baseline runner? All this stuff, overload, high-low, all this stuff you can do instead of just standing there just hoping that someone makes a shot. That's ridiculous.
Hey, Mo, when I look at them, I see the need for a floor general. I got to really organize them offensively. Well, and I don't think they really have that.
You don't need – that would help. You need an offense. You can't – you have a floor general with no offense. It doesn't mean anything. I'm going to bring the ball down, and I'm going to set a pick for Tatum. He's going to catch it, and then we're all going to stand around watching. That's the problem. It's about movement, motion, not relying on so much one-on-one, not making it so hard. To me, you know, I don't pull any punches. There's incompetent coaches and organizations in the NBA. And, you know, to rely on all this one-on-one and why don't, it's not that hard. Go watch Spain player teams. Go watch the Warriors when they're good, how much they move, how much movement they have. Does Steph Curry come down and dribble all the time and take a shot? He's running around, getting handoffs, getting picks, getting back picks. Why can't you do that? I don't understand. Because you just stand, everyone stands around and watches Tatum or Brown try to make a play. That's just stupid. And that's why they're at home. And that's why Miami is going on. It's obvious to me.
You think Mazzulla keeps his job?
I doubt it. I don't think so anymore. I mean, I think he did an okay job for a first-year coach in the finals. He had a tough situation to take over, you know, from the whole situation that started with the coach that everybody there loved, all the players, got up to the finals the year before, and he did something stupid and got suspended. And so Joe had to take over, and, you know, it was a very difficult situation. But, you know, I was just reading something from a writer today that was talking to Tito Horford, my former teammate, a father of Al Horford. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting next to him at the game and said, "Wow, Tito, your son is coaching this team." "What do you mean?" "Your son is coaching this team. So when they call a timeout, everybody goes into the huddle and Joe Winston goes to talk to his assistant coaches about what? I have no hell what idea. For most of the timeout, while Al Horford is in the coach's seat coaching the team. That's what happens. So now Joe comes out of the talking to the assistant coaches for what? And then gets and sits down and has his 15 seconds of, okay, let's do this. Okay, let's go. It's stupid. Just go sit in the – I mean, when we used to do it with the Mavericks, like I was responsible for a lot of defense. So if I had something to say to the coaches, I wrote it on an index card and gave it to Del Harris, who looked at it. And then while Nelly was in the huddle, if it was something that he wanted to bring out, he would show it to Nelly, and Nelly would read it and then say, "Oh, we're in our transition team," or just blow it off. But you don't have to do all that in some stupid coach's huddle at the free throw line that everybody does. It's ridiculous. So there's a lot of problems there. And, you know, it's not going anywhere. Miami Heat's going to be better next year. You know, Hero's going to be healthy. I don't know what their salary situation is. I think it's pretty good, but they're going to have to come up with some money, you know, for some players and, you know, Caleb Martin maybe and stuff like that. But they're not, they're going to get better. Milwaukee's going to just, you know, shake the dust off and come back strong. Philly's going to, you know, they have Nick Nurse coming over to see if he does something new. You know, so what are you going to do if you're Boston?
Philly, they were lucky to get by Philly, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, Philly's
– Philly had him last round.
Let him get away. Yeah, so – but that was a good matchup. To me, that was the finals matchup, but it turned out not to be because Miami's doing a great job. They're on a roll. But, you know, Boston, what are you going to do? I mean, if you're talking about maxing out Jaylen Brown – at $50 million a year? What the hell are you thinking? Look how limited he is. 8 turnovers, he can't dribble. What was he, 4 for 21? Something like that? I mean, what are you doing? So, you know, either get another piece. They also need they need to decide on a center. So they either work with Williams III and get his offense better because he's truly the best defensive center they have. Block shots, rebounds, long, athletic, and young. So make a decision on that. You know, Al Horford, instead of being a starter and playing 35 minutes, you're going to be a backup guy playing 15. You know, and thank you very much for your service. And then find somebody. If Marcus Smart's not the guy, then find somebody else.
Yeah.
For half the price. And if Tatum's not the guy, go get two good players for Tatum.
Our buddy Steve Schrader is checking
not
in.
Tatum, Brown, Jaylen Brown, not Tatum. Well,
guys, are you live now? Yes, we are. This is a special We Got Next Plus. We're just going to do a few minutes. We just really wanted to talk a little bit about tomorrow's finals, but I had to get Paul's take on game 7 because he kind of saw it coming. When it really looked like Boston was in charge of that series after that.
One of the worst performances of an NBA team ever in a game seven, especially at home. Period. End of story. It's terrible. Embarrassing. I mean,
and what you just said about Horford leading the timeouts, that's not a good look for Mazzulla. I mean, you want your players to have input.
No, but now
running that damn team.
Yeah, now there's that happened. That's not all there. So if you talk to your assistants, you got a minute and a half. You have 90 seconds for a timeout. That's what you have, right? 90 seconds. So for the first 30 seconds, you go and talk to your coaches. What should we hit on? And in those 30 seconds, one of your veterans can sit in your chair and have a say. Good. But then after that 30 seconds, he gets out of that chair. You sit down for a minute of the timeout that's left, and you to tell them what you want. It's not the other way around. It's not Al Horford sits in that seat for a minute and 15 seconds, and you sit down for 15 seconds, and you're rushed out of the huddle. That's two different things. So, I mean.
And Paul, I just don't think, I don't think that's a good look for him after everything that's transpired to see that.
I never, like, I've been in this business a long time, and there's some head coaches that give leeway to assistant coaches, and that's good. But some go, like, I've seen benches in the NBA where there's a last second play and there's an assistant coach drawing it up instead of the head coach. Maybe because he's the offensive guy. I don't care if you're the offensive guy. It's my team. I'm drawing up whatever play we decide on, not you.
You gotta be held responsible. Yeah. When they lose, they're not going to come looking for the assistant coach.
Nope.
They're coming to look for you.
And it's a bad look for everybody and the players. Why is this guy drawing up the last play?
Right. But, Paul, that brings me to another quick point, because when you're coaching a team, you definitely want input from your assistants and your players. But at the end of the day, man, everything comes back to you. How do you weigh their input with what you want to accomplish with your team, knowing that you're ultimately responsible?
All the input from your assistant coaches and your players and scouting staff should be done in the video room, in the locker room, and on the practice court, and at the shoot-around. And the only input you want from those coaches and or those players during a game is very short. Hey, if I'm a player and I go to you, you're the head coach, and I go, hey, coach, they're double teaming me from the bottom. You know, if I can kick it out quicker, we can swing the ball. Great. Done. Nothing, no more, don't need any more. If you're an assistant coach, if I'm an assistant coach, hey, coach, Ricky, let's try and throw the zone at him a couple times here out of this timeout and see how that works. That's it. That's all the discussion you need.
Yeah.
All the other stuff is done in video rooms, meetings, and on the practice court.
Yeah, that makes that makes perfect sense.
Tell your son to watch this back.
Yeah, because you're trying to process.
It's too much. And then you have all these voices. The biggest headache, and you'll watch it. Watch. So after a timeout, when it's split up, right, and people are leaving, and there's all these assistant coaches talking to certain players as they go on the court, right?
Yeah.
That's a distraction to me. And you know what? If I'm a head coach, I don't know what they're saying. What are they saying? I just said we're going to switch pick and rolls, and maybe you're saying, hey, you know, screw that. Let's just stay with your guy, you know?
Steve says, when I'm drawing a play, when drawing up a play, I sometimes see cameras catch the play. Do other teams catch plays?
You know, Steve, that's a great question. At that point, it's too late. Now, in today's NBA world, you can have iPads behind the bench. You never used to be able to do that. But the fact is, especially in the playoffs, even in the regular season, all teams know all the other teams' plays. That's all. That's a given, you know. So maybe getting a glimpse of how, you know, that's why when you see like an opponent player sticking his head in the huddle or trying to listen to the head coach, they're trying to get one little thing that can help them. If it was live, but at that point, you have 15 seconds. Your coach is already told the players in the timeout. And if you're going to, at the last 5 seconds, you're going to say, oh, by the way, they're going to run the center, but you're going to mix them up more than they'll help them.
Yeah. I believe that.
That's a great question, though. It's a good question. And, let me ask. So, Steve, if I'm an advanced scout, which I have been, so you know what I'm doing? So if they catch that play and I'm on the airplane after the game and I'm watching that feed and I can see that play, then I can put that in my scouting report for the next game. Absolutely. No question.
Hey, Steve, I saw Don Nelson throw his fist tie at the cat. Mo, did you ever talk to him about the fist ties? What was that about?
I know. What do you mean? I was in the middle of it. What are you talking about? So the fish tie was Don Nelson was protesting that the NBA was making him do certain stuff because Don Nelson had a deal with Converse. So during the game, he wore Converse plain black tennis shoes, kind of like the referees wear with the Converse logo on them. He had a deal with them. Well, the league said, you can't do that. You will be fined. So instead of wearing different shoes, what he did is he put tape over the logo. So it had a big X of tape over the logo. Everyone knew what the logo was. And the other thing, there was a company, a small company in Milwaukee, that's what they made. They made fish ties. There's two brothers. I know them. I met them, played golf with them. And they started this little company. And they gave Nelly a couple ties. And Nelly wore one. And I think we won the game. So, I'm going to wear a bass or a striped trout and it just took off. I mean, I think a year later, they sold that company for millions of dollars.
Wow. I hope Nelly got his cut.
Nelly got a cut of everything. Nelly got a cut of everything.
Steve was saying that the Nuggets are going to win the title. Let's get into this. This matchup, I got some tape from early in the year when they played.
Which you can throw away.
The first thing that stands out to me about this game, look at the stands. It's nobody there. They're down in Miami.
They're coming. They're probably Friday night. They're coming late.
They're arriving late. But
it's like L.A. It's like L.A.
That won't happen when they tip off down in Miami this time.
No. I mean, when was this? This was probably January, right, or something?
I believe it was, yeah.
Probably on a Tuesday night, But here's the thing, Ricky. You can throw all this video out. You can throw all – these games didn't matter. They matter – they're two totally different teams right now. They're both playing way better. They both have different players they're playing – like Miami is Tyler Hero playing. He's not even playing anymore. So the one thing it will do, coaches will go back and look at this and say, well, you know what? We tried, we tried to play low on the pick and roll, and, the Joker got beat. So if I'm Miami, I'm saying we can use that. If I'm Denver, I'm saying we got to change that cover, right? But the outcome and all that doesn't matter to me.
Now, you're saying everybody – picking Miami in 5, maybe 6.
Denver. They're picking Denver.
I mean, yeah, Denver in 5 or 6. But you think they got you think Denver has a shot?
If you look at the rosters, look at the talent level, look at what Miami has done. Miami has beaten the #1 Bucks and the #2 Celtics in the playoffs to get where they're at. They're no joke. They're the real deal. They're tough. They're resilient. They're the underdog, and they love it. They've been there before. So everybody's saying, and I was thinking, Denver in 5. I'm rethinking this after looking at rosters and stats and stuff. It's a 7-game series, and I think Denver wins at home in 7.
What? My first question, what do you do with the Joker?
Well, like I've said before, you can't guard him one-on-one. Miami has nobody. Bam Adebayo can't guard Love. He's too little. Love, I mean, can't guard the Joker. Love can bang him a little bit. You're going to see him a little bit more playing minutes because he has a bigger body and experience, so he can tend with the Joker. And I'm going to throw another name at you that if I'm Miami, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do in game number one. Do you know this name, Omar Yurkestevin?
I do not.
He's a 7 foot, 275-pound third-year player from Miami. He averaged, during the season, averaged 5 points and 3 rebounds. He's long, he's strong, and I'm going to see if I can get 10 minutes a game from him in the first game. Because he's a big body, he's a good passer, he's got good hands, he's not a stiff, and I'm going to see if he can play in the first game. What do I got to lose? Because I know Bam can't guard him. I know Love can't guard him. And who else do we have? Who are you going to put on him?
Yeah, Omar.
Aslam?
Omar Yurtseven.
Yurtseven. 7 foot, 270 pounds.
275, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm telling you, if I'm Miami, I'm going to see if I can get some minutes from him against the Joker. Because.
No, go ahead, Mo. Go ahead.
So when I was with the Golden State Warriors in 91, we played the Spurs. We were the 7th seed and the Spurs were the 2nd seed. And they had some guy named David Robinson. Not a pretty good player, right? So we had Tom Tolbert, Alton Lister, Jim Peterson, and myself. All different guys. Alton Lister was a shot blocker. Tom Tolbert was 6'8 guy that's kind of hard to handle. Jim Peterson and I were big physical veteran players, and we just ran tag team on him. So, you know, Alton, if Alton started and they put me in, I would tap Alton's hand and I would go in and say, "Here I am, David. Now you're going to get a physical guy for a while." Then Tom Tolbert would come in, he'd tap my hand, and Tom would go, "Okay, you're going to guard a 6'8 guy that brings the ball down. What are you going to do now?" That's what we did to him. We won that series. So we gave him different looks with different people. And if you're Miami, that's what this Omar can do. He can give them another look. You got Love, you got Bam, and now you got Omar. And Bam is going to play the most. Love's going to play the second most. And then Omar is going to play, 10 minutes. Give me 10 minutes.
What did you tell Omar going into that game?
Well, play physical, keep him off the block, stay down, don't go for his ball fakes. Bother him with your length, set pick and rolls, keep him active on the offensive end. Easy. It's easy. It's easy.
And don't be afraid to use your fouls.
Foul him hard. No 3-point plays. Foul him smart but hard. And now, if I'm Miami right now, I'm having Haslam show him how to foul correctly. Right? So, I mean, if you want to win, that's what you have to – you got to think. You have to think. Foul. You have to use your assets. Use your assets. How many assets do you have, right?
I've never heard anybody say foul correctly. You got to explain that.
Well, if I'm going to foul you hard and I'm going to make a non-basketball play and you're going to get a flagrant one, you're going to get free throws and the ball out, that's not smart. If I'm going to foul you hard and I'm going to make a play on the ball and I'm going to get your arm or your upper wrist or whatever and you're not going to get a shot off, that's fouling correctly. There's no flagrant one.
Okay.
That's like people aren't taught that. Why? You're not going to get a 3-point play against me, but I'm not going to get a flagrant one either because I'm going to be smart about it.
Gotcha.
You got to do, you know what Nell used to say? Do your work early. You got to do your work early. So when Kareem or Moses or Mikhail or Parrish or Olajuwon or any of those guys are coming down the floor, I would meet them around half court. And then I would bump them and ride them a little bit, just guide them. I'm just going to guide them maybe a foot or two off where they want to be. But if I wait for them to come to me into the paint, it's over. They're controlling the situation. So do your work early, Omar.
That's interesting. That's something to keep your eye out for, too.
I just think, Ricky, So if you're the choker, right, you've had a free reign, right? You can bring the ball down. You can run into the high post. Nobody touch. What if, okay, for the next 5 minutes, Omar meets you at half court and is bumping you a little bit? Just in your shit. Okay, where are we going? I'm not fouling you.
That's what Dwight Howard did to him.
Of course. And Dwight Howard does it to an instigation point, but you're wearing him out. Now when Bam comes in, he's more wore out, or he's a little frustrated, or you got a foul and you accidentally hit him in the face with your arm. So what?
Steve has a question. Why was Alton listed and Dale Ellis always fighting on the same team? I'm not familiar with that. But teammates, you get to argue with your teammates. I mean,
it could be anything, man. It could be someone owes somebody money. It says someone had a girlfriend. Who knows?
Yeah. Or you didn't throw me the ball when I was open or something.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, we get into this a little bit and go through the numbers. So when you look at the rosters, right, Denver is probably a little deeper, but they don't play. Denver plays seven guys. The Joker, Murray, Gordon, Porter Jr., Pope, all those guys are going to play from 35 to 45 minutes. And then you have Bruce Brown, Reggie Jackson, Jeff Green, Braun, the kid from KU, and they're going to play 10 to 20, depending on how they're playing. But they're going to play six guys. Miami has Butler, Bam, Caleb Martin, who's been playing great, Strauss, Robinson, Vincent. Denver's bigger, more physical. Miami has more wing players that are more versatile. Lowry comes off the bench. So here's the numbers that stuck out at me when I looked them up here just recently. It scares me for Miami, makes me hesitant. Denver shoots 50% from the field and 38% from the three. And their opponents shoot 47% from the field and 34% from the three. So let's look at that. Denver shoots 50% from the field and gives up 47%. That's an advantage. Then they shoot 38% from the three and they give up 34%. That's an advantage. The Miami Heat shoot 46% from the field and their opponents shoot 48%. Their opponents shoot better from the field than they do. And from the three-point line, Miami only shoots 34% while their opponents shoot 37%. So Miami's defense is weaker. Their opponents shoot better field goal percentage from the field and from the three than and the Denver's flip-flop. So that's a telling stats to me that I still like Denver in seven. I think it goes farther than people think. But those numbers that have been carried out over almost 100 games now are going to play. And, if you play the odds are the team that shoots better from the three and from the field usually wins the game over the team that lets their opponent shoot better.
Steve has a great comment here talking about the altitudes that Miami's going to have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, there's the flight and altitude that we saw the Lakers had to deal with, that everybody has to deal with. Miami's younger than the Lakers. They're more adaptive. And it doesn't accumulate over, for game five. It's in and out. So you go to Denver and you play in altitude, right? You're there for 4 days. Then you go back to Miami and you play at sea level. Then you go back and play for 2 days in Denver at altitude. Then you go back to Miami and you play at sea level. And then that last game in the altitude in game seven. If it goes like I'm thinking, and you know what? I haven't been right very much on any of my playoff picks.
I don't know. You called that one the other night with Boston.
Yeah. But if it goes seven, like I think it could, game seven could be another blowout, except this time Denver would blow out Miami.
Yeah. Hey, Mo, today 19 years ago today, this play happened. That's Tayshaun Prince's famous block in 2004 against the Indiana Pacers as the Pistons were on the way to winning the NBA title. But Mo, look at the score. 60.
Yeah, because it's the broke-ass Detroit offense.
69-67. Mo, that's a halftime score these days.
Yeah, but okay, so... you know, that was a defensive whatever. And guess what? You know, that block, guess who else had blocks like that? LeBron James had blocks like that. Kobe Bryant had blocks. That started that behind the come from behind block. But so, okay, so you're taking that. Okay, Mr. Writer, Mr. Journalist. Okay, what were the rest of the scores in that series?
They were all very similar. I covered that series.
What were they?
I don't remember the scores.
Yeah, I mean, to me,
they were I'll look them up right quick. But they
what
were
year
all
was that? What year was
2004.
That?
But Mo, how did we get from? And those were intriguing basketball games, even with those low scores. How did we get from that in 20 years to where we are today?
Yeah, but that's not indicative of what the game was like back then. That's not indicative, right?
Yeah, I think you're right there.
I mean, so, you know.
But that was a slugfest series.
Yeah, so number one, back then, if you have the box score of that game, I bet even with Reggie Miller, I bet Indiana didn't shoot more than 15 threes, probably 12. You have a box score?
I'm looking it up right now.
So in today's game, NBA teams shoot 35 to 50 threes in a game. One team. I bet back then, I bet the total three-pointers in that whole game was 20, I bet.
I'm looking it up, and... they shot 21 threes that game.
I told you. So, so there's your difference, right? Every team in the NBA is going to shoot 30 in the playoffs. That's 60 for the game. That's three times the threes. I mean,
and Meta World Peace and Reggie Miller each took 7 threes.
Yep.
I don't know why Meta World Peace took. I'm glad he did, being a Pistons fan.
Because he was open.
Hey, that's a reason. Son, there's a reason you're open.
There's a reason you're open. And, you know, well, I'm open, coach. I don't know. You know?
So this was that series. Pacers won the first game 78-74. Pistons won the next one 72-67. They won game 3, 85-78. Pacers won game 4, 83-68. Pistons won game 5, 83-65. And 69-65.
Okay, what was the other series? Who else was playing?
This was the Eastern Conference Finals. The Pacers won.
Look up the Western Conference Finals.
Okay.
It was probably the Lakers, right?
Yeah, they went on to play the Lakers. Let's see.
It was probably the Lakers and the Spurs, the Lakers and Houston.
Western Conference 2000. And that's when they had Malone and Gary Payton.
So that was a slowdown offense, too.
Western Conference. Lakers versus Timberwolves. They beat the Timberwolves.
That was KD, right? Sam Cassell?
Yep. And they won the first game 97-88. Timberwolves won the next one, 89-71. Lakers won the next one, 189. Lakers again, 92-85.
Yep. So playoffs, in the regular season back then, you're going to score. It was always first team to 100 wins. And if you score 107, 108 points, you're going to win in the regular season. But in the playoffs, that always went down because people slowed it down a little bit. But, I mean, how many points did the Celtics score in game 7?
Yeah.
85.
Yeah. So come on. Hey, Steve Schroeder, I hope I'm saying, I don't know if it's Schroeder or Schroeder. I hope I get it right. Text me and because we appreciate your comment. Brian Winters would be in the Hall of Fame if he played today.
Brian Winters today in today's game would be shooting 15 to 23s a game.
And making a ton of money.
And making at least, he'd be making 8 to 10. So he'd be scoring between 20 and 30 points every game just on threes. Yes.
Is he one of the best shooters you were around?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And he was, you know, I told you the story. Like, you know, we were in Denver and he went 0 for 21. And then we went to LA and the next game he went 15 for 21. And the report I sat next to, the report said, what, you know, you shot 0 for 21 last night, and now you come back and shoot 15 for 21. What were you thinking when you're shooting 0 for 21? He said, I was thinking I'm going to make the next 20 shots. That's what I was thinking.
That's the way I need to think on my putts, man.
I mean, if you look, like we played, like Steve, I'll tell you, like we had Brian Winters, Junior Bridgman, Marcus Johnson, I think, was on that team. We played Denver. In Denver, I think the score, here's your score in the mid-80s, 160 to 150. How about that score?
Yeah, that was with Kiki and
Greyhound. David Thompson. And, yeah, I mean, I think there are three guys with over 40 points in that game.
Davis from North Carolina, Mo.
Walter Davis.
Walter Davis.
So that was, you know, shoot. You get three or four players scoring over 40. Brian Winters is one of them. Yeah.
Mo, tell our viewers a little bit about a guy we never talk about, a Walter Davis.
Yeah, I mean, Walter Davis, you know, they called him the Greyhound because he could run for days, really athletic, you know, very skilled. You know, there's a lot of them. I mean, who, anybody talk about David Thompson anymore? David Thompson, Skywalker, jump out of the gym. You know, he's the one that he was competing with Ice Gervin for this scoring championship, and he scored like 53, and, you know, that same day, and Gervin had to score like 45, you know, to get the tie, something like that.
Yeah, just so many great players have come through the league, and we've talked about it before. That's why the whole thing, the greatest of all time. I mean, Mo, who be any of those guys on my team?
There's no GOAT. You can have, that's an argument, right? You can't compare. I mean, and if you go by numbers, it's Wilt Chamberlain. You can't argue that's not Wilt Chamberlain. I don't care when he played. He can't help when he was born. I don't know who he played against. I don't care. He scored 100 points. He scored over 60 points 125 times. That's, and everybody combined for the whole 75 years, it's 40. Everybody in the whole ever played. So, you know, come on. You just, but you can't. I mean, that's why. And what is it? The mountain of whatever, where there's five guys.
Mount Rushmore.
There's no Mount Rushmore. You could have like top 10 of all time, right? So, you know, it'd be Wilt, MJ, Bird, Magic, LeBron, probably Kobe. You know, a few more in there, you know. So that's a better argument.
Yeah. Alex English. I don't remember English being in Milwaukee.
Yeah, probably early on. I mean, you know, probably early on. Who knows? Yeah, they trade them probably for a refrigerator and a washing machine or something, you know, for the Mecca, you know, because they need to wash the uniforms.
Hey, but Mo, we're going to get out of here, man. But this was great. I mean, I just wanted to spend a few minutes talking about tomorrow and looking back on Sunday and just kicking it with you. Any final thoughts? And what should people watch for tomorrow?
So tomorrow night, the Miami Heat played Monday, correct?
Yeah.
So what I believe happened is they flew from Milwaukee probably on Tuesday to Denver. So they had Tuesday.
From Boston to Denver.
Yeah, from Boston to Denver. Right to Denver. So they've had 2 days to recuperate, get used to the altitude a little bit. They'll have 3 days tomorrow. They've just played. They had a great win. They killed the Celtics. And the Denver Nuggets have been sitting there for, 10 days now? Trying to stay sharp, trying to keep mentally ready, trying to do all that stuff, which is almost impossible to do while you're trying to stay healthy. You know, you try to limit your scrimmages, blah, blah, blah. So if I'm a betting man, I would look for the Miami Heat to be able to sneak out game number one in Denver. Now, Denver is well prepared. They have great coaches. They got a team that's put together really well. They're playing for each other. They sacrifice for each other. You can tell they like each other after they won this Western. They like each other. But staying ready for 10 days is very, very hard to do and play at the next level. It's like I've compared it before. Like if you're a sub guy in the NBA team, it's a very hard job because here's what it's doing. It's like you're sitting on the bench at a standstill and the game is going on at 100 miles an hour. And you have to be put in the game and be able to go from 0 to 100 in 2 seconds. It's like a race car coming out of a pit stop. And the same thing is if you're getting ready for a series and you've had a lot of time to just sit and wait and practice pretty much 3/4 speed probably because you're not trying to get hurt. And now, you know, Miami's come off where they've been going 100 miles an hour. They're ready for you. I remember when I scouted for the Mavericks and we beat the Spurs and we ended up playing the Suns in the finals of the West. And I kept trying to explain on my scouting report and my meetings about how fast the Phoenix Suns play. Steve Nash, Stoudemire, Rajah Bell, Boris Diaw, all these guys, they were 8 seconds or less. They played like this, right? So all my scouting reports and all my videos, guys, they play faster than you. They just play so fast. They're fast. And the guys understood and heard me. But I remember in the first timeout of the first game, standing behind the bench, and our guys, and they looked at me, and I'm like, I told you they play fast. But you can't simulate that.
Yeah.
Right? You can't. They play fast. Okay, coach, they play fast. But till you're in it, in the race, fast is freaking fast. So this could happen to Denver. And we'll see. You know, Denver, could they overcome it? Sure. But if I'm looking out, you know, I would look at maybe Denver stealing. I mean, maybe Miami stealing game one, maybe. And then the series, you know, they get the home court, whatever. But also, man, I wish I could call Spoelstra. I wish I could tell him, hey, Spo, play this Omar kid. Just try him. Try him. Big body. You know, he's a European guy. That's what Joker is. Fight fire with fire a little bit. Long. Not super athletic, but, you know, skill. Just try him. See what happens.
275, man.
What do we got to lose, man?
275.
I mean, you saw in the Lakers series in a fit of panic how Ham went to Tristan Thompson, right? At the end, at the fourth quarter, he went to Tristan Thompson because Tristan Thompson is 6'10", 270. So that he tried it, and it worked for a few minutes, right?
Yeah.
But this could be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And finally, thanks for that nugget. Alex played for the Bucks his first 2 seasons, traded to the Pacers. than to the Nuggets.
What did the Bucks get for him? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah. Well, for sure, the Nuggets got a good one for Alex Ennis. But, Mo, we're going to get out of here, and we'll be back Monday, if not before. But until then, for my great friend, Paul McCaskey, I'm Rick Hampton. Peace, everybody.
Enjoy it, man.
All right. Take care. Later. Enjoy the games.
Yep.